Every single day I feel it.
Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm best, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to That One Studio. That was kind of a hard cutoff of the music there. I apologize for that. It didn't really blend in. I pushed the button too hard. Guys, this is not perfection here. This is your boy C-Rock here in That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. I got another great guest for you today. We're going to find out what they're made of, the ingredients that have gone into making them who they are. Brian Lofermento is in the building. Guys, listen, we had a great talk before the show. I like to have discussion before the show a lot of times with people, and I just love this dude's vibe already, so you guys are going to love him. He's been an entrepreneur since he was 19 years old, with his businesses reaching over 7 million people worldwide. He's also the host of the Entrepreneur to Entrepreneur podcast, one of the top business and marketing shows in the world, with 800 episodes and counting, airing 5 days a week. Having helped over 5,000 people around the world launch their businesses, Brian now serves as a trusted advisor and executive across a portfolio of businesses across industries with a simple and exciting approach to business, marketing, and growth. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, man. It's funny that you say we had a great conversation before we even hit record. I always joke with people, those are the best things. That's why us podcast hosts, we get all those benefits.
Yeah, that's okay though. But like, we'll continue that same vibe, so don't worry about that. We didn't miss anything. And anything important in that conversation, I'm definitely going to bring up in this conversation, so don't worry. So I start this show the same way every time, but before I ask you this question, I just want to let the listener know that I appreciate you all. You know, it means the world to me to have your support and have this platform where I can speak and also bring some great guests to you and pour into you to make you more unstoppable to live in the life of your dreams. So thank you. All right, Brian, the question is, what are you made of?
Yeah, it's funny. That's the one thing that I knew that you would ask today. I love the fact that you've made an entire movement out of that question. And it's funny because it's probably the hardest question for any of us to answer, because my mind immediately goes to the simplest answer, which is, well, I'm made of every single thing, both good and bad, that has gotten me here in my past. And that's why the older that I get, C-Rock, the more I realize the people who are uncomfortable talking about their past, they're really missing out those ingredients that they are made of. And when I think about that, I can't help but think about the fact that I'm even here. I'm the son of an immigrant mom. So I'm a first generation American on my mom's side. And the story of how her family got to the U.S. is so deeply ingrained in my approach to life. And I feel like that's what I'm made of, is all those things that came with that journey, and that journey that I've picked up the baton, you know, since I was born, that I've been able to carry. And I think at the root of it, I'm originally from Boston. And when Dunkin' Donuts launched, they had that, their marketing phrase was Boston runs on Dunkin'. And then it became Massachusetts runs on Dunkin', New England runs on Dunkin'. And when I think about my equivalent of that, honestly, C-Rock, the only thing I come up with is I constantly am running on excitement. I'm fueled by excitement. So I'd say that's at the very root of it. That's the good stuff that I'm made of.
I like that. So you're made of excitement. You said that's the root of it. What's the root of your excitement though? Like, why are you so excited all the time? Like, people are listening, right? And they're like, shit, man, I'm not excited about anything. Or only once in a while. Like, what is your secret?
Yeah, there's so many ingredients that are obviously behind it. I point towards my background, like part of my, you and I talked off air about the labels, our identity, what are we attached to? And so frequently I find in conversations that I keep bringing up the fact that I'm a first generation on my mom's side, first generation American. And I think that's so at the root of it. I think there's something so special about being a child of an immigrant or an immigrant yourself. And that's why we hear so many success stories come from immigrant families. And I think because part of that is when you're an immigrant, someone in your bloodline has decided, and this is true of most of us somewhere in our bloodline, that someone somewhere decided, I'm going to go to the land of opportunity. And so I think picturing the United States, obviously I'm biased, we're Americans and we're here having this conversation, but to me it's the greatest country in the world in so many different ways. But at the root of all of those great ways, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of so much stuff, is that land of opportunity, that anyone can come here and make it. So even as a child, for example, my number one sport was soccer. And as a super competitive soccer player, every game was an opportunity to win. Whether we were the favorites, whether we were underdogs, nobody can stop us. It's up to us. And I think that's the immigrant story of, I'm not waiting for someone else to come save me in whatever country that I'm in. And in my family's case, it was Albania, which was under communist rule at the time. They said, we don't have to stay. We're going to take it into our own hands. And what's more exciting than that, than us having the power of what we want in our own hands?
Yeah, control, man. You know, I talk about this a lot, man, but I don't ever want to be a puppet.
And, you know, yeah, if you're in a country like that, you're a puppet. Like, you're controlled by the master. Now, some people would say in the United States, we're a puppets in a form of fashion as well. But I think that, you know, I want to open this up to this discussion on free thinking, like being a free thinker, and especially how that applies to being an entrepreneur, and not being a swayed and being in a sheep situation where you go with the masses. You got to be able to step out on your own, differentiate yourself. What has being a free thinker meant to you and your success? And carrying through what you're doing now?
Yeah, it's a good question, C-Rock. And I'm going to keep it to the family theme, because I think as children, we model the behavior that we see in adults. And who are the adults that are closest to us is our family. And when it comes to free thinking, I'll never forget as a child, I remember that I would go to school and I would question everything. Gosh, me on a soccer field, especially if a ref makes a call, I can't keep my mouth shut, which makes sense as to why I'm a Celtics fan these days. I think it's true of so many of us Boston sports fans. And so I'll never forget as a child when I would question adult figures, let's say soccer coaches, refs, teachers, when I was in the classroom. Not everybody likes to be questioned, C-Rock. And the one person that I always admired in that is my oldest uncle, who passed away, unfortunately, a few years ago. But what I always looked at as a child, when I saw my uncle sitting at a table with a bunch of other adults, not everyone wants to be questioned in their beliefs. You can pick religion, you can pick politics, you can picture economic theory, whatever you want to imagine. My uncle was like, here's what I believe in. Question it. Question it. Because he wanted to defend it. And if someone could raise a better point, he wanted to hear those better points. And so I think at the root of free thinking is open questioning. Question literally everything. And it is slightly rebellious, which is why I think all of us entrepreneurs have that in common, because we've rebelled against so many different things in our life, including the traditional corporate 9-to-5 world. But at the root of it is not only questioning, but I think being willing to be questioned, pick apart all the very things that I believe in. It's not that I hold them near and dear so that you can't pick on them. I hold them near and dear so I'm ready and willing for you to pick at them.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. All right. So next step here we want to go into is your journey and your story. Like, what's the story? Like, entrepreneur since you were 19 years old, like, take us through that and how you have, you know, reached over 7 million people worldwide. Like, what's that all about?
Yeah, for sure. So picture this again, questioning everything as a teenager, got kicked off my high school soccer team as a result of questioning our head coach. So soccer was my life up to that point. You and I talked off air about, like, when our businesses, if we have a business that flames out or we get burned out with, that's part of our identity. My entire life identity was being a competitive soccer player. And I thought I was going to play in college. I thought I was going to play professionally, but that didn't happen because of my attitude, because of the fact that I was questioning everything. So fast forward to freshman year of college, and school came very easy to me. I had a 3.98 GPA after freshman year. I was playing a ton of video games. I was playing soccer. I was playing Ultimate Frisbee. I was doing anything other than studying. And I had all this free time. And that summer, I looked at myself and I was like, gosh, what am I going to fill this time with moving forward? And so I asked myself, what do I love? Well, I love soccer. I can never deny that. I love writing and I love the internet. I'm a millennial. Like, I grew up using AOL back in the day, AIM back in the day. And so I said, let's just write about soccer on the internet. And so the first ever article that I wrote on a blog, it was a free blog from Blogspot, was in June of 2008. Fast forward to 2010, my junior year of college, and I had 20 people working for me. We were closing multiple thousand dollar advertising deals all from my dorm room. I was flying to England, and this little soccer blog that I started became a full-on soccer media company where the English Football Association named us as the fans' favorite football site. And so I really learned not only about how to follow my passions, which is, that's muddied advice that I think we could for sure talk about. But I think on top of that, I learned, hey, this is what it looks like to actually build a real business. And it was when I started treating it as a business and not a blog, to come back to those labels, that something in my brain clicked. And I realized that's what I love to do. I love building businesses. So when I graduated, started a marketing agency, helped others grow their businesses. In 2015, published my book, Entrepreneur to Entrepreneur, because I knew a lot about marketing, sold a lot of copies in its first year. People were emailing me saying, how do we get more? So a year later, started the podcast. And now 800 plus episodes later, it's crazy how it sounds like all of these things naturally led to another, but it all makes sense in the rearview mirror. But I just followed those transitions along the way, where they were taking me, whether they felt natural or not, that a soccer blog led to a business podcast one day.
Yeah, you know, and one thing, man, I got so many things I want to talk about here. Let me think where I should want to start here. All right, let's talk and start about this part. A lot of people, I don't know if you ever hit on this or not, but do you ever hit on the, when you were going through that business and then you started like, man, we could make some money. First of all, was it your idea to make some money or did somebody offer you money to advertise, first of all?
Yeah, good question. Someone offered me money. I didn't even think about it. It was a company in Seattle, Washington, and they said, how much would you charge for advertising? In a classic entrepreneurial mistake, we have no idea how to value it. Dude, I was pumped. $200 for a 6-month advertisement deal.
$200 for one time or per month?
Oh, one time, C-Rock. We were balling out.
So then, do you ever cover on your podcast talking about that where people go into business and then like valuing themselves, valuing their worth? And then also like, you know, a lot of people have this money block, man. And I experience it sometimes too. I'm like, now I don't, but I had a situation before where I start like $5,000. It seems like a lot of money. And then you think it's a lot of money. So you're going to think they think it's a lot of money, but then somebody pays you $5,000 and you're like, damn, they just stroked that. Like it was no big deal.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I remember. Yeah, all the time. I think we actually have an obligation, Mike, as people who have gone through this evolution ourselves, we have an obligation to talk about it. Why? Because every single newer entrepreneur, probably every single human being on planet Earth faces this problem, whether it's we're talking money, valuing yourself money-wise or relationship-wise, how often do we see people settle in different ways? And so I think we all learn the lesson the hard way, which is why I love your show. You have these open conversations. For me, two things really shaped me understanding value in the marketplace. One was, I'll never forget when Nike emailed us. It was my junior year of college, and they paid us $8,000 for a 24-hour video ad on the website. And I was like, I just made $8,000 in one day. That was like mind-blowing money to me. I'd never seen that much money in my life. And then I'll never forget years later when I started my marketing agency, we were selling WordPress websites, was one of our services. This is before WordPress was as automated and easy to use as it is today. And we were pitching local schools, local businesses, $4,000 to $8,000 on these website projects. And one day we had a meeting with a big company. We knew their annual revenue was $50 million in revenue. So my business partner and I were sitting in the parking lot that day, and we were talking about our pitch to the board. And we said, they make a lot of money. What number should we tell them? And my business partner goes, say a crazy number. And I was like, let's tell them 10K. And I was like, you say a crazy number. And he goes, let's tell them 14K. And so all in, we eventually mustered up the courage to say $18,000. So Mike, we go through the whole presentation in front of the board. The CFO is there. They love our presentation. And at the end, they ask the question, how much do you guys charge? And I stood there, puffed up my chest. And I said, $18,000. And the entire room died laughing. And the CFO said, we don't even need approval for that. We can just expense it on our credit card. And that's when we realized that we were playing small, but it took us missing out on, we asked them afterwards, how much would you have paid? And they said, we thought you guys were going to come in for 40K. And I told myself, I'll never make that mistake ever again.
Well, I was just kidding. 40,000. I was just kidding. 18. I misspoke. Nah, yeah, we've done that before. Man, it's such a fun. It's a game, dude. Like everything's a game, really. And once you start to realize that life is a game, everything we do is a game, then you can start having fun. And when you have fun, you're more successful, right?
Yeah, it's true. And that's coming back to the root of what I'm made of is that excitement. I think it's so much more exciting when you view it that way. I think that all too often in life and in business and in everything, we think anything is permanent when the reality is literally nothing in this life is permanent. And so when you adopt that mindset, yeah, did I miss out on a ton of money in that deal? For sure. But now I'm going to make even more money on the next deal. And that really accelerated our growth. So to that point that you just made about playfulness, if you view it as that game, well, in a video game, if I can't beat this level, it doesn't mean I have to return the game. It means I get to try again and I get to be even better at the next level. So yeah, I think the game analogy is a really good one.
Yeah. I had a lady named Kate Donovan on my show earlier today, and she's awesome. She's somebody that helps people with burnout and avoiding burnout and overcoming burnout. But she said that she has this resentment rule, and I thought this was really cool. And I'm going to share this with you. The listeners are going to hear it again if they listen to that episode. Tough shit. but I thought it really made sense to me. Like, how she priced her products and services is, will I resent the client if I do it at this price? And then will I resent myself? And I was like, damn, that's pretty good. Cause I think about that a lot. Cause I don't want to resent partners if they're not pulling their weight in partnerships. So she has this resentment rule. So she uses pretty much everything. And I thought that, what, like, have you been in a situation where you resented that, like a customer or a partner or something?
Yeah, I'll be honest. And again, this comes back to not valuing ourselves. So when I launched my podcast, Wantrepreneur to Entrepreneur Podcast, that was back in 2016. And so here we are many years in. Mike, I'll be honest with you. When I first started the podcast, the promise I made to myself is I was like, it's going to be so cool when we get to episode 100. And then, you know, as you get past that, I was like, it would be so crazy if we reached episode 250. And then, you know, one thing led to another and time passes and commitment and discipline and all of those things come into play. But as I got to episode 450, I was really starting to hate my show. And I tell this story publicly, and all my listeners know this. And the reason is because when I first launched the podcast, I was selling things from my show. I was selling my online courses, my in-person retreats. But as my business model changed over the year, I no longer needed to monetize any of these products. And that's a luxury that I've matured in my entrepreneurial journey to that point. So I was just doing the podcast because it's what I enjoyed doing. But now that value on the back end was missing. Not strictly speaking dollar-wise, but I wasn't gaining customers, which means I wasn't serving people on that one-on-one level. I wasn't building those intimate relationships. So by the time episode 450 came along, I was burned out. And the one promise I made to myself is I was like, look, I've been on this journey for years. I'll get to episode 500 and I'll tell the listeners it's over. And so episode 499, I had one of my best friends on. He's a seven-figure entrepreneur, runs a very successful YouTube channel. And in that hour-long episode, you could hear my burnout in that episode. And Ian, my good friend, he even said, he's like, are you thinking about quitting? And I think all of my listeners could hear it too. And that week, I got so many emails, C-Rock, from past guests that were saying like, hey, we got so many sales from coming on your show. Can we come on there again? And it really hit me. I was like, gosh, that's where the value add is. The value add is for my guests. The value add is for all the amazing entrepreneurs that we get to put a spotlight on. Let's more deeply serve them. They're the customers while the listeners are the consumers. So we switched our model entirely to a guest-funded show. And that just, like, all of a sudden I found myself totally reinvigorated because I felt valued again. We don't make a lot of money on the podcast. It's not that we look at that as a profit machine. It's just that exchange of energy. And I find that not only can we more deeply serve our guests using this model, but my energy is back there because I'm valued and I no longer resent this show. So to go from episode 450 to 500 took us about 10 months. And then in the year after making that switch and no longer hating my show, we went from episode 500 to 800 in about a year. So to show you how much it gave me fresh energy.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, like, we don't charge to come on this show, but it depends. Sometimes it depends, but most of the time it's not a model that we do, but we do it for relationship building, networking. And that's something that fulfills me, man. Like, I met some of the greatest people, but, you know, I started the show actually with bringing mentors on and people that I wanted to learn from. I still learn from people now, but the intention is more of like, I've switched this now. Like, I've worked on myself so much and the experiences that I've had and the success. Now I switch it to, how can I help people? Not just the listeners, but like the guests. Like, I'm like listening to them and talk. And then, I mean, I've helped people raise money that were guests on the show, like literally like $2 million. Like, you know, and it's just a guest on the show. It's like, that's awesome. You know? So I love what you're doing, man. And so now what is your focus now? Like, what do you focus most of your time on, and what has you most excited right now when you wake up in the morning?
Yeah, for sure. So I structure my week because I've got my hands in so many different pies. So for example, Tuesdays are just podcasting days. And gosh, does that get me out of bed knowing that I'm going to do 8 interviews that day with literally just amazing entrepreneurs doing cool things in the world. So that gets me excited on every Tuesday. But then otherwise, I have equity in a bunch of different companies at this point in my business portfolio, just the nature of it. And you totally get this as a longtime entrepreneur as well. Just being in business, you connect with amazing people and we're all of service to each other. So I'm really lucky to work with really cool companies, former pro soccer players that finished their careers and didn't know how to start their business, that I'm business partners with them and their entities to help those grow. And then my own agency where I continue to advise sports related companies in the business development and fundraising spaces, because that's obviously at the core of my my background. So with all of that said, on a weekly basis, it's really cool because I know, you know, Monday's my consulting days, Tuesdays is my podcasting days, Wednesdays are my connection days, which is what you and I are sitting down here today and doing. And so it's really exciting that no 2 days are the same. It's somewhat regimented, but totally has the freedom that I also crave to go to Colombia next week and fly my entire team out there so that we can do an internal retreat. So it's cool things like that, that there's just a never-ending flow of excitement here.
And so Tuesday's your podcast day, but like if you're going next week, do you have those scheduled already and then you reschedule them, or do you plan out? See, I'm a spontaneous dude. That's why I'm asking this. So like, do you plan out ahead of time and then have to reschedule that day because you're going to Colombia?
Yeah, so I'm a little bit spontaneous. That's why Tuesdays are like my one safe day. For example, so I live in Tampa, Florida now. I moved here from Los Angeles, and Miami is just a little too close to Tampa. And so, yeah, on a weekly basis, I'll be like, oh, I kind of want to go to Miami right now. So I will spontaneously do that, which is why Tuesdays are the only days that I physically need to be in the recording studio. So Tuesdays are the one days I will not be spontaneous for. With Columbia, with those bigger trips, yeah, we have those planned quarterly.
Yeah.
And we also have months of episodes in the bank. So for example, an interview that I did yesterday, which you and I are having this conversation at the end of February, these will not air until April or May. So yeah, we've always got those in the bank.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. So from here, what's the vision from here, man? Like, if I could snap my fingers and make it happen, I'm a genie. What does that vision look like for you from here?
Yeah, it's funny. There's really two tiers of the way that I dream and the way that my visions are long term. And really the way that I separate those two buckets is one at that consumer level, of that individual level of how can I serve as many people. Obviously, podcasts are a really scalable way to do that, because C-Ruck, I'm sure you do this with your show as well. When I log into my podcast hosting, I always click through the map and I see that we've got listeners in over 150 countries, which is so cool to picture that. I get individual emails from those listeners. So that's a really big part of what I want to do in the future, is continue to serve on the individual level as many people as possible. But then on the entity level, I really do care about businesses. Entrepreneurship gets me so excited. It's totally changed my life. So to be able to help more businesses, here's the disclaimer and where it really fits into my vision for it, is I don't think enough businesses act like businesses, especially in the world of sports, is that they think they are a sports association. They think they are a tech company. But at the root of all of that is, if you want to do this for a while, which I'm 16 years into my entrepreneurial journey, and if you want to serve more people, you better be really freaking good at business, which involves marketing, business development, fundraising where it's appropriate. So yeah, I just want to continue to transform more sports-related businesses to act like businesses, because a lot of times they don't realize that they are.
Yeah. And so business, it does consist of a blueprint of marketing, sales process, all that jazz, man. Like, and most people, you know what I find, Brian, working with a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs, they don't focus enough time on building revenue. Like, they build systems, they build these products out, they do this and that, and they just don't focus on the top line. It's like, I don't understand. How are you a business?
Like, to me, they're not, to be honest with you. That's what separates it. And that's why I don't feel like most people treat their businesses like businesses, because the other stuff is fun, C-Rock. There's nothing scary about firing up Canva and creating a bunch of social media designs. There's nothing scary about, you know, building out your website on Squarespace. None of that stuff is scary. That's a hobby. If it's not revenue generating, it's a hobby. You have to start treating it like a business. I just had a call with an executive director of a very large state youth soccer association. And when I talked to him about what he does and the role that he plays in business, he bragged to me about all the things that are happening on the soccer field. And what I didn't hear is he's locking in sponsorship deals. He's getting approval for grants. He's bringing in cash flow to the association. And if he ignores that side of it, there won't be many kids playing on organized soccer fields for a very long time. So that's what lights me up, is bringing that business element to it. And you hit the nail on the head, is it's the one thing nobody wants to talk about that we all need to talk about if you want to be in business, is money. And I don't know where societally we've turned that into kind of like the thing we're not supposed to talk about. But gosh, coming back to questioning everything, these are the conversations we need to have more.
Yeah, I agree, man. All right, branding. What about branding? Is that something that you got good at, or did you rely on someone else? Or talk to me about branding. I mean, this is my thing, man. Like, I know, by the way, this hat, right? I'll tell you something real quick before you get into this. I wear this hat. I have sweatshirts, t-shirts too, with that one on it, right? and the little one's hidden, but they don't see the one in there most of the time. And they're like, what is that? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I'm in the airport, everywhere I go, what is that? I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I play dumb, right? But it's something that I always look to see where I can get attention from, you know, without putting nudity. Like I could wear a shirt with a naked woman on it and people that would get attention, but that's obviously over the line. Up to the line, how far can I press it to get somebody's response? And, you know, what's your thoughts on branding and, you know, is that your expertise or do you rely on someone else for that?
Yeah, so it's funny. There's obviously a million sides to branding. Apparel is a great one, which you are totally crushing. I love all the stuff that you guys pump out. But yeah, apparel's one. Visual identity is one of it. But for me, the part of branding that I really love to focus on is the experience. It's like that age-old quote of people won't always remember what you said, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. And so whether it's myself representing any of my companies or anyone who's on my team, I always tell people, I'm like, Just do it with a smile and leave them with a little bit extra. They'll never forget us in that setting because how many business meetings are we all in every week where it's just boring? No one's bringing excitement or energy to the table. When you get an email and you're like, hey, I forgot my password. Can you help me reset it? And they're like, here's the password reset link. No, I'm not willing to ever show up in the world that way. I will always leave you feeling better, I hope, than the way you felt before you interacted with me. So yeah, to me, branding is all of those tiny things. The way that we email clients back, the way that we email leads and prospects back, the way that we show up in video calls is we don't do anything average. You have to show up. And C-Rock, I'm sure you agree with me here. I think the world is starving for effort. I think most people, and I think ChatGPT is actually only making this issue worse, which for those of us who are willing to do a little bit of effort, it makes it easier for us. I don't think branding has ever been easier than it is before because everyone is sounding the exact same. I'll give you a tangible example. When I published my book in 2015 and I decided to start giving the book away for free, people just had to pay shipping and handling, which is a very popular lead generation model. And every single book I personally signed, I put a little branded sticker inside of there. The amount of feedback we got about those two small touches was unbelievable. But C-Rock, on my end, every time I had to sit down to sign that book and put a stupid little sticker in it, only one thought came in my head. This sucks. This sucks. My hand hurts. And what I realized right there was that's branding right there. It's willing to do the things that suck. And I'm more willing than anyone else that I've met to do the things that suck. And those are always the things that stand out. Why? Because no one else is going to do it because they suck. So yeah, that's how I've always showed up in my brand. And I think there's so much power in doing those non-scalable things will ultimately lead to you having a business, a life, relationships worth scaling.
Yeah. Speaking of AI, like with automation and everything in business and, you know, where are you on with all this? And, you know, when you're advising other businesses and things like where are you with it? Like, how are you telling them to approach it?
Yes, I think we all should be using AI. It's a very useful tool. And heck, if there's a tool that's sitting on the table that can help me in any way, you and I are both big fans of systems, I will use it if there's a tool that will help me. And so I think we're foolish if we don't jump on that train. For me, I use it as an additional brain separate from my own. It's got coming back to that letting people question you, inviting people to question you. That's the only window. Our brains are only capable of leaning on our own knowledge, our own experiences, our own observations. Now we have this crazy second brain that is indexed and cataloged millions, trillions of pieces of data from the historical internet. And so the way that I use it is exactly that. I'll plug in. I mean, I'll write novels to this thing and I'll say, here's what I'm working on. Here's what I'm thinking about. Here's my brainstorming for it. What am I missing? It's the one question I always ask AI, what am I missing? Because I want that independent third party second brain to look at my existing thoughts and add to them, complement them, question my own thinking, and also add new thinking to the mix. So for now, there's a lot of amazing use cases, but that's my favorite. What am I missing? That's the one question.
Yeah, you know, I look at it as we always wanted to be superheroes as kids. So this is getting us closer to being superheroes. You know what I mean? So that's why. And, you know, personal development wise, spirituality wise, like, you know, a lot of people think that all the information's out there somewhere already, whether it's on the internet and it's just in the environment, whatever. And you get these intuitions, these downloads, God speaking to you, which I believe in God, but whatever it is, right? What do you do for personal development, whether it's meditation or to gain knowledge, become more able, increase ability, stress reduction? Like what is your go-to?
Yeah, so gosh, there's so many ways we could take that. And we all do a million different things. For me, there's a combination of things that are super meditative for me. For example, when I'm playing chess or when I'm on the tennis court, it is impossible to play chess or to play tennis and think about other things. And so to just have your mind that clear, things will just float in. And obviously you have to be aware, you have to be cognizant of recognizing those thoughts. So those things are really powerful for me. I'm super cognizant of, on a weekly basis, doing things that totally clear my mind. Long bike rides are another really good example there. On top of that, yeah, I mean, I love reading books. Obviously, I'm a writer myself, so I love reading the wisdom of other things. But gosh, really at the root of personal development is conversations like you and I are having here today. But what you can most often find me doing, I'm a total city person. Put me in any city, anywhere in the world, and I will sit there and I'll talk to anyone who sits anywhere near me. So I pretty much live my life. If I'm not in the podcasting studio, I'm in a coffee shop and I'll talk to anyone of any age. And I remember it's a story that my mom, or a quote that my mom shared with me ever since I was a little kid, is she said, take the smartest person in the world and the dumbest person in the world, put them in the same room. Only one of them will learn something, and it's going to be the smartest man in the room. The smartest man in the room will always learn something, and the dumbest man in the world will never learn anything. And I think it's such a powerful lesson in us acknowledging that, gosh, we can learn something from literally everyone. And I'm just constantly trying to extract those, which comes from where? From questions. Just asking people questions beyond the, hey, how are you doing? Hey, what are you doing today? Hey, how was your weekend? So I think open conversation. I think conversation's the answer to a lot of things, C-Rock.
Yeah, my grandfather used to do this. We'd go to restaurants all the time. My grandmother used to get so mad at him because he would talk to everybody in the restaurant every time they go to dinner. And I'm the same way, man. Like, what are people for if you can't talk to them?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, man, I'm with you on that. I love it. I love your vibe, dude. Thank you for being here on the What Are You Made Of show.
Heck yeah. Thanks for inviting me, man. What you're doing is amazing for so many people around the world. Really appreciate your work. I know how much goes into it. Podcast listeners, when C-Rock says leave a rating and review, it's because not enough people actually do it. So yeah, just want to acknowledge the work that you're doing. And thanks for having me on today.
Thank you. Back at you, man. Thank you all for listening or watching, however you're consuming this content. It's your boy C-Rock. Signing off from That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. Until next time, be that one.
Music licensing reimagined.